back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
If you missed hour one, you missed terrific context on the hirings of Kim Ng and Perry Minazian from our own Bruce Levine, who's got a long history with both of them. That was enjoyable conversation in the first hour. And this hour, we're going to broaden out and look at some of the national stories. And as it relates to the offseason, the hot stove for both the Cubs and the White Sox. And later on, we'll talk to Gabe Kapler about his former assistant pitching coach, Ethan Katz. But right now, our next guest joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. Bruce?
Sean McAdam from the Boston Sports Journal, good friend for a long time. Longtime baseball writer, reporter for the Red Sox in the Boston area, joins us on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Sean. Sean, you with us?
Yep. Can you hear me, guys?
Oh, yeah, we got you.
Yeah, could you hear us okay? Everything good?
Yep, all set.
All right. Yeah, thanks for joining us. And
My pleasure.
I guess we start the conversation with certainly Alex Cora. What has been the mood and the general consensus from the reaction in the Boston area to Cora rejoining the team?
Yeah, I think it's been a hit public relations-wise for the Red Sox. The vast majority of Red Sox fans are happy that Alex Cora is back. I think there is a segment who remember, you know, the reasons for his firing, although the Red Sox always emphasize that it was a mutual parting of the ways back in January. You know, he, of course, had ties to not only the 2017 Astros sign-stealing scandal, but then the Red Sox themselves were investigated in 2018. So there are people wondering why they would go back to him, having been involved and culpable in two different scandals, although much less so in Boston. He was essentially cleared by MLB's investigation of the Boston mess. But in general, people liked him. This is, after all, a guy who in his first year as a manager at the big league level led the Red Sox to 108 wins and a World Series title, and that was only 2 years ago. So the memories are still fresh of that, particularly with the Red Sox coming off a last-place visit. I would say about 90% of the fan base is very happy that Alex Cora is back.
What are the skill sets that are highlighted as the reasons why you'd go back down this road this quickly? Is it an ability to work with the front office and be that bridge with the players? What's the strong stuff that the Red Sox like so much about him?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. The ability to, you know, we know that the game has never been or required more collaboration between baseball operations and the manager and the dugout. There's a lot of day-to-day communication, not only in terms of personnel and roster maneuverings, but also in-game strategy and philosophy and all of that, and analytics, obviously, a big part of that too. But I would say that Cora's overwhelming selling point here is his ability to build relationships with players. He's still young enough that, you know, it wasn't that long ago that he stopped playing, so there isn't this big generational gap that exists. He's bilingual, obviously, which helps when you have a number of key players on the team who are Spanish-speaking, be it Xander Bogaerts or Rafael Devers or Alex Verdugo or Christian Vasquez. I mean, there's half your everyday lineup there that is Spanish-speaking, and Cora can speak to them in a way that perhaps those who do not speak Spanish as their native language or first language can't. But it's just the ability to communicate, to get the best out of players. Most people agree that it was not a coincidence that Devers took a step backward this year with Cora gone. He also connected in a very positive way with Eduardo Rodriguez and saw him blossom in 2019. So I'd say those two things, the ability to serve as that conduit between players and front office, but mostly his ability to build relationships and communicate with players.
Sean McAdam from Boston Sports Journal joining us in Inside the Clubhouse. And Sean, when you go the other way with losing arguably one of the top two or three players in the game in Mookie Betts and seeing him celebrate with his new teammates a championship, showing his great abilities and verve out there during the playoffs, how tough was that for Boston Red Sox Nation? And what type of repairs do the Red Sox have to do to keep their fan base happy moving forward, knowing they let a player of this magnitude go?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bruce. I mean, he obviously is a generational player. The argument could be made that he is the best homegrown position player the Red Sox have had since Carl Yastrzemski. And as you noted, one of the handful of best players in the game. That was a huge PR hit for the Red Sox. And there's some trust that they have to earn back from the fan base, because people, even though the trade is some 9 months old now, people cannot quite get their head around why the Red Sox couldn't come to an agreement with Mookie Betts and get him extended here. Was that because, you know, there were some issues in terms of how they treated him? Was it because they weren't willing to pay enough? It certainly, the fans agree, is not because they lack the resources. So that's something they're going to have to wear for a while. And the fact that that Betts plays for a franchise that is likely to be a player on the postseason stage for the immediate future, it's not one that's going to go away. He's going to be front and center in October probably for years to come, and that's going to always be a painful reminder to Red Sox fans. They do have some fence mending to do here, not only because of the Betts trade, but the fact that the team finished in last place this past year with the worst one-loss percentage since 1965 for the franchise. And they've also had four last-place finishes since 2012, which, again, should not happen for a team that has these kind of resources. So they are trying to, I think, urge some patience and give Chaim Bloom some time to, rebuild the franchise from top to bottom, reassemble an inventory of minor league players that can serve as, a constant source of reinvention of talent, a supplier of talent. And ironically, I think the franchise, while people sometimes think that, well, they hired Bloom from Tampa Bay, that means they want to cut payroll and they're not going to be competitive from an economic standpoint, I don't think that's true. I think the franchise they're trying to model themselves after, ironically, is the Los Angeles Dodgers, to whom they traded Mookie Betts. That's a big market team with the ability to occasionally go big on a marquee player like Betts, but also under Andrew Friedman, a team that has built up one of the top two or three farm systems and has the ability to constantly supply homegrown players to the major league organization and be a World Series contender every year. That's the goal. The question is, how long is it going to take to get there, and how do the Red Sox retain their fan base until that happens?
So that's terrific context and backstory on where the Red Sox stand, and what kind of spending they might be ready for this offseason is the next question. And I've been thinking about them the way that I think about the Cubs or the Cardinals, in terms of a team that is dependent on remarkable day-of-game revenue. They've done such a good job, as the Cubs have then modeled themselves after and done as well, of monetizing the area, of controlling the area, and bringing in all that beer money and more from around the ballpark. Without that to depend on, how hamstrung are the Red Sox in terms of predicting revenue, and therefore what can they spend this particular offseason?
Yeah, that is a good question. And the Red Sox have been sort of evasive about what their plans are budget-wise. They will not, not that anyone is expecting them to roll out this exact dollar figure that they have to adhere to, because No team does that. You don't want to telegraph what your limitations are and give a competitive advantage to other teams. They basically have sent the message, we'll do and spend what's necessary. I think the question is how much do they want to go all in on a year where they're not likely to be a World Series contender next year? I think for the most part, they would be happy to field a team that was competitive, maybe even competitive for a wild card spot next year. But it's unrealistic to think that you're going to go from finishing last year with the third or fourth worst record in the game to a team with a chance to win a pennant all in 12 months. So I don't think they're going to empty the coffers and go after Trevor Bauer and JT Realmuto and George Springer and go on one of those spending sprees that they have in the past. And that's been, I think, a failure of this organization, is that they have been guilty of overreacting and after a poor season figure that the best way to attack that is to throw money at the problem and go out and sign Hanley Ramirez and Pablo Sandoval, and we all know how that worked out. So to get themselves back in that same bloated payroll jail that they recently extricated themselves from would be counterproductive. But they do have to take steps toward being somewhat competitive. And I would say that while they did suffer significant revenue losses, as all teams did, they are better positioned than most, in part because they are currently in talks to take on some venture capital money as part of a merger with Fenway Sports Group. You guys have probably heard about Red Ball, which includes Billy Beane, with the possibility of Beane joining Fenway Sports Group, the holding group that would own the Red Sox, as well as the Liverpool soccer team and some other holdings the team has. That infusion of more than $1 billion of additional capital could help counterbalance the losses that they realized from no fans and the pandemic and shortened season. I wouldn't expect a huge splash in free agency from them, again, because that would kind of get them back into the same problem where they were a year ago. But I could see them taking advantage of some non-tenders that are going to happen next month, maybe take on a veteran contract that another team is looking to unload and acquire a couple of elite prospects with it for as a payoff for taking on a big contract off another team's hands. So I think they're going to look for unique opportunities to pounce. I just don't think that's going to be in the free agent market with a big, blue chip guy like Bauer or Realmuto.
Sean, in closing with you, and Matt and I really appreciate your time and expertise joining us today. You had the opportunity to be around Tony La Russa in Boston when he was a consultant with the Red Sox for Dave Dombrowski, the president and GM. What were your thoughts about his level of communication at that point? I know he wasn't there on a daily basis. I know he was there on a daily basis, but not there to necessarily communicate with the media. And your thoughts from the outside, looking in, as to what he's got left to offer the Chicago White Sox as the manager going forward.
Yeah, Bruce, I can tell you that while Tony's hiring in Chicago was a surprise throughout the industry and probably was negatively received either because of his nine-year gap between dugout stints or his age and wondering, can this guy still be effective in 2021? Talking to people in the Red Sox baseball operations department who worked with Tony on a daily basis for those couple of years that he was here as Dombrowski's advisor, they had universal praise for him in terms of his willingness to get into the analytics, to look at the game differently, and further, that players, some as young as their early 20s, often sought La Russa out on the field during batting practice, were eager to discuss things with him and communicate with him, sat with him sometimes. Tony traveled an incredible amount. Dave is one of the very few general managers and executives left in the game who would still make nearly every road trip, and Tony accompanied him on the vast majority of those. So this was not he'd show up every other homestand and pop his head out of the dugout. He was around the team virtually on a day-to-day basis throughout all of spring training and the regular season, and both the players and guys in baseball operations who were young enough to be his grandchildren found him a valuable resource and painted a picture contrary to the sort of stereotype that, well, this is an old guy who won't learn new tricks. That was far from the perception of both players and analysts and executives in the front office who found him open-minded, willing, and ready to embrace what was new.
Fascinating, really is. Sean McAdam, Boston Sports Journal contributor to WEEI on their radio shows all the time. Sean, it's been great having you. Thank you for your expertise. And that last insight was really interesting. I had no idea what you were going to say or where you were at on Tony. So that's going to be interesting to look at going down the line. Have a great offseason. Hopefully we can cover baseball virtually okay before we get to spring training next year. Have a great offseason and be well and happy.
Same to you guys. Look forward to seeing you hopefully next year in Chicago, Bruce, and thanks for having me on.
You got it.
Thank you.
Sean McAdam, good stuff there from that Red Sox perspective on a lot of different things, Bruce.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we come back from the break, we have a little bit more conversation about baseball always, but at the bottom of the hour, 10:30, we will have Gabe Kapler, the manager of the San Francisco Giants, joining us to talk a little bit about everything, Matt, including the new pitching coach for the Chicago White Sox.
We'll do that when we come back and touch on, once again, the historic hire yesterday in baseball as well. It is Inside the Clubhouse. Matt Spiegel and Bruce Levine here on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago's most listened to sports morning show, 5 to 9. Great Chicago sports guests and you, the Chicago sport.
Welcome back in on Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score. Expected to be joined soon by the Giants manager, Gabe Kapler. But Bruce Levine, a big hire yesterday with the Miami Marlins. We talked about it a little bit in hour number one, but it's going to be interesting to see what it means moving forward. Well, I think we already have seen what it means from a lot of good writing, a lot of female media, and just a lot of people talking about what it means to see Kim Ng as the first female general manager of really any professional team sport in America. Pretty cool.
Yeah, you know what? I've known Kim so long and know how competent she is, so how good she is, how smart she is, how she knows all facets of the game, that it's so natural for me to say Kim Ng, general manager of the Miami Marlins. I know it's groundbreaking and it's cool, but she is so competent and so this is so long overdue that I'm thrilled about it, honestly. And the idea that she'll be in a room with a group of men talking men talk, and the idea of can people relax, be themselves, 150% with Kim Ng, who is just the most competent and easy to communicate person with that you would imagine. Yet at the same time, being able to command tremendous respect and being able to turn off and on serious to fun, just like anybody else in the game. So it's going to be a smooth transition for Kim Ng. And she is also blessed with the fact that the Miami organization has gone out and developed some of their own players and traded for very good players. As we saw at the end of the year, that team that went through the Cubs, those last two playoff games, the season manager in Don Mattingly, the ownership, which is also diverse with Derek Jeter at the head of the baseball operations. It's a wonderful situation all the way around.
There are little girls out there, or older girls. This is a quote from the story on MLB.com from a female in baseball. Little girls out there who are never going to think it's something they can't do ever again, because there she is. It's the power of having someone visible in a role like that that you can follow. It's pretty darn cool.
I'd love to see 8 or 10 women or qualified people like that follow over the next 5 or 6 years. Again, diversity is what we seek as far as qualified people, and there are a lot of there's a lot of diversified people who are qualified in the game, and hopefully will get opportunities.
670 The Score is where you are. Inside the Clubhouse is what you're listening to, and our next guest joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park.
The manager of the San Francisco Giants, Gabe Kapler, nice enough to take some time on a Saturday afternoon, early or late morning, to join us on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Gabe. How are you today?
Good morning, Matt. Glad to be with you guys.
It's a pleasure having you on. And we were just talking about the hiring of Kim Eng and what a special baseball person she is, transcending being female, but obviously being the first female hire as a general manager. Your thoughts, Gabe?
Yeah, no, I thought it was a really important moment for the industry, for professional sports, that Kim was able to take down that job. I've had some interactions with Kim over the years, and she's extraordinarily professional, diligent, smart, and really, really excellent hire from my perspective by the Marlins. Just an incredible, incredible, deep, rich resume, and just really important that we get minorities, women, marginalized groups into positions of power in Major League Baseball and across professional sports if we want our games to grow.
Gabe, have enjoyed you and your writing for a long time. When you were writing about food and nutrition and writing about baseball and analytics, and it's been fascinating to watch your career. Here in your second stint as a manager with the Giants, what have you learned as compared to the first stint about what it is to be a manager now, even this close to when you were a player? The job and the role continues to evolve, I'm sure. What have you learned most recently about how to do it even better?
Yeah, well, I think the fact that we're managing not just a baseball team in the dugout, but we're managing people in the community. We're also creating relationships with the fans, with every part of our organization. So our business operations, our baseball operations, our ballpark operations, and that it includes the grounds crew, it includes ticket sales, and of course our baseball operations department. And, you know, the job of a major league manager, the job of any leader is to connect and sync up with those fans and everybody within the organization, and also treat the players like citizens, like people, and not just try to tune them up as baseball players. Obviously, the first and most important job of the manager is to win baseball games. That's never going to change, or to help their club win baseball games. But all of those things are part of the job description for a major league manager these days.
Gabe Kapler of the Giants joining us for a few more minutes on Inside the Clubhouse. Your assistant pitching coach, Ethan Katz, with the Giants this year, has been named the Chicago White Sox pitching coach for 2021. If you can, give us a little bit of the essence of what you learned about Ethan, his ability to coach as well as communicate on a daily basis with players.
Yeah, Ethan is excellent in the bullpen. He's got a wide variety of drills and techniques that he uses to help pitchers get better. He's incredibly disarming, and I think you guys will find as you get to know Ethan that he's soft-spoken, but that is not that doesn't mean that he lacks any strength in his leadership characteristics. He works his tail off and wants to be the best. And, you know, we're going to miss him. I personally am going to miss interacting with Ethan on a daily basis, getting his briefings on our pitchers, watching him run our reliever stretch, watching him create new ways to keep a bullpen session fun. And I mean like the tune-ups between starts for the starting pitchers, but also any work a pitcher does off the bump. He's really a well-rounded individual, very well-equipped to handle this job. And I'm excited to watch him grow on this new staff in Chicago.
It's interesting, disarming. Love thinking about that for a pitching coach, because sometimes you gotta relax a guy either on the mound or in the bullpen between starts. You gotta, in order to communicate with him, you gotta break that down. So he's got that personality to get along with a lot of different kinds of pitchers. Would you say, Gabe?
Yeah, no, that's a really good way to put it. And you know, when you go out for a mound visit, very rarely is the goal to fire the pitcher up, right? To kick him in the ass, to give him a little extra energy and boost. It's actually usually to, like, relax the pitcher, right? Those are big moments. Things are moving really fast when a pitching coach makes a visit. And, you know, one of the things that's really important is can you relax that pitcher? Put him in a good frame of mind. I think, as you get to know Ethan, you'll find out that's one of his best qualities. He's just calm. There's no panic with him. He's not in any rush. And I think for a very, very young coach, it's kind of unusual. And I think that he's going to do a really nice job of putting pitchers at ease and subsequently at putting the rest of the staff at ease, which is also a responsibility of what I believe to be a very important position on a coaching staff.
Gabe Kapler joining us for a few more minutes on Inside the Clubhouse. He is going into his second year as the manager. San Francisco Giants. Gabe, the meshings of old school, new school baseball, metrics as opposed to the practical scouting. How have you evolved as a baseball person, knowing that you had certainly a strong career and you understood the scouting part of it from the practical sense and now the metrics? How has that evolved with you as a manager going from Philadelphia to San Francisco?
I think in particular, early in my time in Philadelphia, I had a bit of a rigidity about me when it came to making colder decisions and decisions that were less based on kind of the confidence levels of the players and more based on just cold hard facts. And as I've evolved and actually into my second year in Philly and now through my first year in San Francisco and going into my fourth year managing, what I'm recognizing is that, you know, striking a very healthy balance between those facts and between instilling confidence in players. And sometimes that has to do with allowing a pitcher to face one additional batter. Sometimes it comes in the form of, even though I might get a marginal upgrade or we might get a marginal upgrade by pinch hitting for a player early in a game, giving him that one more at bat and showing him when you can that you believe in his ability might pay dividends for 5, 6, 7, 10 games. And even though you might lose that one strategic edge in the game, it might be worth it. So I guess what's happened for me is versus new school versus old school. Like, I'm really trying to strike the right blend between the two, because I think there's a ton of value in both philosophies, and more specifically, I just stay genuinely more open to alternative points of view, and I recognize that I know and we know very little, and it's all right to kind of keep getting surprised with information, and it's all right to change your mind, and in fact, I kind of believe that if you're not changing your mind, you're not changing your philosophy, you're probably not thinking all that deeply. So I've just kind of come off some of the rigidity of my first year managing and slowly improving that. I have a long way to go.
As far as a quick follow-up to that, the Kevin Cash moment, how is that perceived? And how did that go around in your head with that situation with him taking out a pitcher who was dealing, but knowing that their success came from going with the analytics in this time frame of not having them look at the third time around for the lineup.
Yeah, no, I thought that decision was a very difficult one. And I'm not going to try to be diplomatic here. I had different feelings in the moment. But what I'll say is, and knowing Kevin Cash and knowing how prepared he is, he does what a lot of managers do these days, which is to kind of go through the possibilities of the game. And I almost guarantee you that he thought about a similar moment that came up in that game, or this specific moment with Snell prior to the game. And he had some ideas about how he wanted to handle that moment. So what he was going to do, and obviously this is something that everybody can discuss with Kevin, is he was going to take that preparation prior to the game and then combine it with the feelings that he was having in the game and what he was seeing with his eyes and make the best decision for the Rays. So my takeaway for all of this is he was prepared, he was ready, he made the decision that he thought was best for the Tampa Bay Rays. I respect him for making a decision that he knew would be unpopular if it didn't work, and still doing it, right? Like, that is, you have to have some courage to take maybe a path that's not going to make everybody happy if you think it's going to help your team win. Ton of respect for the way Kevin Cash prepares. Know that was a very difficult moment, and I think he did everything that he could. I think he did it the right way.
You know, the self-awareness that you offered about what you've learned and trying to have that balance is awesome to hear. And I wonder if you have found that an openness about that with players actually empowers you as a leader, as opposed to weakens you as a leader. Because I think that's been the thought process for a long time, that if you dared share, you know, the kind of lessons learned along the way that you just shared with us with players, that it makes you a weaker leader. I think that's not how it works, you know?
I think that's right on. I mean, think about how we are attracted to people, right? Like, we're attracted to people who express some vulnerability and know that they're not perfect, and we want to be around and listen to those people more, because everybody is like that. When you peel back the curtain, right, you take down the mask. Everybody's imperfect, and everybody makes mistakes, and everybody's finding their way. So I think what that allows you to do as a leader is it allows you to find common ground. It allows you to challenge and raise the bar for other people, because you're challenging and you're raising the bar for yourself. And it also makes you better at supporting, because people feel just a little bit safer. They feel a little less intimidated, and you can still maintain your strength and your conviction and your strong leadership characteristics, and, you know, be willing to expose some of your own personal deficiencies along the way.
Gabe Kapler joining us for a few more minutes on Inside the Clubhouse. Matt and I agreed we weren't going to put you in a situation to talk about Tony La Russa at this point before that court case and all that situation shakes out. But I will ask you this, Gabe. What are the challenges, even for you, a young manager, in dealing with millennial players now, and the extra time you must put in to explaining things in a way where there is that understanding when that young man walks out of the room?
I guess, like, really having understanding and empathy for where those young players are. And I'm not sure, like, if you're looking for a perspective of somebody who just is in a different generation than the players in the clubhouse. But I guess one way to...
Not really, no. I'm just asking you flat out, dealing with millennials, you not being one, but you being a generation right past it, and on a daily basis, you know, them wanting to know things in a very well explained idea about how things are going.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I just don't see a whole lot of difference between mm-hmm. where I am in my life, and where a 35-year-old player is in his, or a 28-year-old player is, or a player that's coming up to the big leagues. I just kind of see us all on as human beings, and all trying to navigate life the best way that we can. And I'm certainly not perfect at connecting with everybody, but one of the reasons you build a large and diverse staff, and why that's really important, is because you want to have people that are able to connect with everybody in the clubhouse. So you want to have as many resources to those players as possible. So with the Giants, we tried to build the most diverse staff that we possibly could, and we're going to continue to follow that path. And that's in an effort to make sure that our players have enough resources and different perspectives to lean on.
Hey, Gabe, I remember when you were writing about fitness and writing about health and eating lifestyle, you wrote a piece about eating a pepper, like a red pepper, like an apple, just like biting into it and trying to do it that way. And I got to tell you, I think about it all the time because I love peppers and I'm trying to eat it healthier these days. I'm vegan these days. Like, do you still eat peppers like that? Do you still eat peppers like that with the seeds and all?
I don't. And it's really interesting. Like, I've explored food in so many different ways because I'm so fascinated by how we can use food to fuel our bodies. And right now, I for a while, I've been on a kick where I haven't been eating vegetables at all, really. A few mushrooms here and there and a few leaves, like some spinach and things like that. But other than that, I just haven't been eating vegetables all that much. And so I can't speak to, like, eating peppers like an apple anymore. But I can tell you that I loved it. I absolutely loved kind of exploring food like that. And I remember eating those peppers like apples, and I'd go through several a day, and that was just a different time period in my life. And it's fun to look back on those and be like, oh, you know what? I haven't had a pepper in like 4 years, but I really did enjoy that while it was happening.
Yep. Gabe, we really appreciate your time today, your expertise, and I just have to say your willingness to communicate in an area where you could easily say, well, Chicago, that's not relevant to what we're talking about. I just appreciate your communication skills, your friendship, and have a great offseason. Matt and I wish you nothing but the best. Hopefully we will all be able to get together in spring training sometime in February or March.
I'd love that. And Bruce, I really do appreciate the way you communicate upfront, transparent, direct. And you've been doing it for years, and I'm happy to come on your show anytime. It doesn't matter if you're in Chicago or New York or L.A. or whatever. Like, I enjoy talking to you, and Matt, it was good to talk to you today.
Thanks, Gabe. You too.
Thanks again. Gabe Kepler, manager of the Giants, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. Matt, we have to step out and make way pretty soon for Rosie and Grody. We'll have some closing comments. If you want to get a phone call in at the end, 312-644-6767.
This segment on The Score is brought to you by Amazon. Man, could have done another 30, 45 minutes with Gabe Kapler. Thoughtful, interesting guy. Bruce Levine didn't even get a chance to ask him about hitting the ball that Dwayne Wise caught at the end of the Mark Burley.
No, we did not. But it was a great show, great content today. Lots of fun. Join us again next week. Every week we're on Inside the Clubhouse from 9 to 11. As we join you with Chicago Baseball Talk, Rosie and Grody next. People to thank today: Gabe Kepler, the manager of the Giants, certainly. Sean McAdam from Baseball Sports Journal joined us as well. Adam Studzinski, a job well done as always. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com. I write both White Sox and Cubs. Have a great week, Matt.
You too, Bruce. You can find me at Matt Spiegel 670. I'll be in with Danny Parkins on Monday to preview Bears and Vikings Monday night. Rosie and Grody are next. Have a great day, everybody.